From the heart of Big Ten country, Los Angeles, California, Ryan Abraham and David Woods present the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together, yes, we do. We make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Big Ten football. David is home. He had some sort of illness or some parasites that were attached to him or something.
It is simply a holiday, and I didn't put it together until mere moments before the show that requires my children to be home, and I can't leave them unattended. Apparently, that's the law.
Oh,
that seems... I know. All these stupid laws.
Stupid California. We have so many laws. Yeah. Can't just leave your kids at home?
You would think. You can just put out a trough with all of their food and liquid for the day and chain them to it, and then go away, right? But no, apparently there are laws against that too.
Yeah, such a little too. Okay. Well, anyway, David's home with his kids. I'm in the studio, just came from the gym, sweaty. So we're a mess. It's good.
Look at my hair. Check out the sides.
It's looking pretty good.
It's never a good look. It's never great, like, because of this whole thing, but it's not good right now.
Yeah.
If you're watching,
he'd have to get up and shower.
That didn't really help you at all.
He got up and made like breakfast for his kids, but didn't have to shower. We were moving the times around for the show. We didn't know what the hell was going on. But we're here. It is a holiday. Happy Veterans Day to everyone. I'm going to name a veteran.
Is that a happy? Do we say happy with that one?
I don't know. Maybe. Mary?
You know, because they're the ones you say happy with and the ones you're like, you know, you don't say happy.
Okay.
I don't know if this is a happy one. I mean, it is. It should be because it was for the end of World War I, so that should be happy.
Yeah.
Right? But, you know, kind of maudlin talking about the vets and stuff. So I don't know if it's a you know, remember, you know?
It is. But I'm going to name my Uncle Dom. He's my godfather, actually. He's a Vietnam War veteran. So happy Veterans Day to him. Do you have any vets?
Hell yeah, Dom. My dad was a veteran. He fought long and hard on the front lines of sitting on a German train running the mail cart for the army bases in Germany in the 60s. While other people were going to Vietnam, my dad was running a poker game as part of some unit in the logistic corps.
That's pretty cool. But it's my grandfather, my late grandfather, but he so he was World War II, but it was he was an air traffic controller, and he was in the Aleutian Islands. So like you're in the middle of freaking nowhere, Alaska. But it was there. I actually have a book here about like the only time we've ever like the only battles that were ever like fought like on American soil. Yeah. It was in the Aleutians because they're the Japanese in like, but they were like
because some of those islands are way closer to Japan than they are to the proper United States.
100%, and they are. It was like people would die just trying to like get there. Like there was like more people died like logistically trying to, you know, get to this area than anything else. Like just I think there was Americans. We had people, you know, that were killed, but they were like the Japanese were already gone. They were just trying to like land planes and stuff. And it was so the weather was so bad. It just it was like a it was bad. But yeah, the territory, I guess, we ever gave up as a country.
Right.
But anyway, I don't know if you say Happy Veterans Day, but we're remembering, you know, thank all the veterans. If you see one out there, say thank
you. Just find a veteran. Find a veteran, accost them on the street and say thank you.
Thank you for your service.
So they say you're welcome.
Thank you for your service.
If they say no problem, make sure you keep berating them until they say you're welcome.
Yeah, that's what you want to
do. Do it like a pure boomer.
Berate veterans today. Okay, perfect. That's seems like a good plan.
Find a veteran to berate today.
Jesus, David. Okay, if you want to email us, I think we only got one email today, big10cast@gmail.com. You can call or text us at 424-532-0678. Tweet at B1G Podcast. And if you have the Apple Podcasting app, You can follow us and leave us a 5-star rating and review, and we are going to give away some gift cards. I sent out a bunch. I need to buy more stamps because I'm out of stamps, but I sent out all the winners of the Survivor Pool. They all got, including Griffin, they all got $31 gift cards from Trader Joe's. So thanks, John and Brea, for that. And a couple other review winners, I sent them out as well. So I don't know. We did the reviews last week, right? I don't know if we have any new ones.
We do have a couple. Do we want to do those? Yeah, let's do them. Okay, let's do them.
All right.
We got three. All right. This is from Air Force underscore Bruin 22. The Chase Garbers of podcasts. The Chase Garbers of podcasts. If you know, then you know. There it is. That's a review. It's a great point. Chase Garbers, the ultimate winner in Pac-12 history.
MVP of the entire
Pac-12 era.
Yeah, of the whole. Yeah, the entire conference existence. He's the MVP.
Yes. This is Daniel from Seattle. Signetti killed my dog. (S). UW fan here. Ryan and David give out gift cards each week. $31 for each point Signetti uses to kill my dogs. Meanwhile, these guys throw it in our faces by giving said gift cards to like 3 Duck fans in 1 week. It's disrespectful. Haven't we suffered enough? Kalen DeBoer swept us off our feet and love-bombed us 2 years, gave us the greatest moments of our lives, only to take all of it away so we could start a new family in Alabama. Now we're stuck with no child support, and worse yet, our new guy can't count to 12 coming out of a timeout. Would a gift card for a mundane amount of money make me feel better? Probably. All right, that's our early contender. Let's see if...
I like that. Yeah, hold on.
He knows the score. He gets the women. Signetti kills.
This is from Rugged Sissy. Hey, everyone. Howdy, listeners. Your reviews are too long. Shut your bloviating stink holes, you wax-handed morana boobs. Love you. Be well. All right. So we've got 2 winners this week.
Yeah.
Rugged Sissy and Daniel from Seattle.
So Rugged Sissy and Daniel from Seattle, send me an email, ryan@uscfootball.com, and I will send you a Trader Joe's gift card. So
yeah. Morana boobs. I have not heard that before. I like that one.
Yeah. Let's see. Okay, I think that's what we had there. I was trying to read one of these comments. So if you are watching live on YouTube, I'm trying to look at the comments and stuff while I'm hosting and here by myself and sitting in my own sweat from the workout. But yeah, we got. Well, there's not that many games to go over because we had a bunch of bye weeks and stuff. But we have some sort of what do we call it? Do I have the breaking news thing? I think it's over on this one. We have. And what was a runaway in our picks is now become a much tighter race.
That's right, baby.
You maybe remember my 7-1 week. Well, those are long gone. I was 1-5 this week. David went 3-3. So he's sticking at 500. He's 50-50-1 picking these crazy games. I am now down to 52-48-1. Still winning, but the big lead I had was shrunk. So if you followed any of our picks this week, it probably wouldn't have helped you. Certainly mine would not have. But I want to let you know, over at MyBookie, you can do your own picks. You can do whatever you want. Are we idiots? Probably. Would you like to show us how much better at picking these games you are than us? You could send us an email, show us your receipts, and say, hey, look, there's the games I picked. Here's what you said. And you were very, very wrong. And that's, you know, you wouldn't be wrong if you do that. But you can use our promo code. If you haven't made a deposit over at MyBookie, promo code POC, and you'll get a 100% bonus matching whatever you put in. So if you put $100 in, you would get $200 to play with and bet the games. Like we do, we bet the total, you know, we're betting the winner with the spread. You can do the total for the game. You do over-unders. You can do first half, second half. There's live betting, all that kind of stuff too. And I don't know if you've tried this. Dave and I are both big, you know, Vegas guys. We like playing the games over in Vegas. They actually have a live casino over at MyBookie. So you can play Baccarat. You can play roulette, blackjack, which we like. You can do that all over at MyBookie. So they got live dealers, live games, and it's a lot of fun. So if you want to check that out too, if you're maybe not I'm not, you know, into the sports betting stuff as much, but I do like a little Vegas action. You can do that over at MyBookie as well. So make sure you go check that out because you can bet anything, anytime, anywhere, only at MyBookie and use promo code POC.
That was absolutely beautiful. An excellent read. I have a question for everyone out there. When you hear the word Baccarat, do you often think of Burt Bacharach? Like, I think for the longest time, I thought they were the same word. And I was like, is his last name like a play on that game?
Oh, it was like a stage name or something?
Yeah, it never quite clicked. Still doesn't. Yeah. No, I'm thinking about it and it still doesn't. Also, for some odd reason, when I was a child, I thought Toronto was in Florida. That just occurred to me.
Oh.
And I still can't quite shake the idea when I'm like not really thinking about it. Anyone else have that? I think it was something to do with baseball at some point, and I was like convinced Toronto was in Florida. Please help me out there. If anyone else has that, it's like the dumbest person's Berenstain Bears thing.
Yeah, I think the climate's very similar, so I think that's probably very where similar. Some of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mark says he thinks of Burt, as in Burt Bacharach, and James Bond, because it does seem like a high-end game. I don't even have ever played a hand of Bacharach. Like, you see it, but I don't.
I couldn't tell you the first thing about Bacharach.
Yeah, it's like you have to get the 9 and like all the 10 cards are worth 0 and you have to beat the dealer. But you could like, it's like you could bet with the dealer. Like, it's almost like you can bet like the blackjack. Like, I want the dealer to win. I don't know. I'm not sure how it all
I'm
works,
surprised but. They haven't figured out a gaming angle for like hearts and spades. There's got to be a way to make those money games at like a casino level.
Because they do like the Texas Hold'em ones and stuff. Like, they try like versions of that.
Yeah. Because spades is a great game. Spades is awesome. Maybe it's just simply that you can't have more than 4 players at the table.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. All right. Cool stuff there. So, yeah, use promo code POC and go check that out. What else we got, David? So we have to recap all of the games. We have our new power rankings.
That's right, baby.
But, man, so many teams were on buys. Okay. So let's see. First up. I don't even look to see who they played here. We have, let me find it. Why am I? Oh, I got to move this over here. I know, this is not very.
Purdue Boilermakers.
Who the hell did they play?
Ohio State.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is the only game I got right. They were taking on
the Ohio State Buckeyes.
We have them number 3.
All right, I'm going to speak briefly about this game, but I do want a point to be raised because Ohio State won 45-0. It was a slightly closer game than that final score would make it appear. I watched an upsetting amount of this game, and the entire first half was more about Purdue just repeatedly shooting itself in its foot than anything really dominant that Ohio State was doing. Like, Purdue had a blocked punt that turned into, I think it was like a 5-yard touch, an 8-yard touchdown for Ohio State. They then missed a field goal, which turned into a touchdown for Ohio State. They then turned it over on downs after, I think it was literally like an 80-yard drive down the field. Or not, maybe not that much. No, it wasn't that much. It was like 40 yards. But they were doing some things in the first half, and Ohio State was not dominating in any way at that point. It was 21-0 at halftime. Purdue had probably done enough that if you were like looking at just the stats of it, you would have said should have been like, I don't know, 17-7, something like that. 17-3.
That probably is fair, yeah.
And then the second half, it was just kind of more of the same. Purdue interception, fumble return for a touchdown, missed field goal, turnover on downs. Just, you know, Ohio State's defense is really good and they're doing stuff well on the margins, but this wasn't like an offensive blowout of Purdue. It wasn't like Ohio State suddenly has everything figured out offensively and they're just going to dominate teams. That's not really the way this game shaped up. It was just Purdue could not stop shooting itself in its foot. And so they lost 45-0 because when I say could not stop, I mean like literally every drive doing something to just fail and not really, you know, sometimes forced by Ohio State, but not always forced by Ohio State. Just failure, 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 failure.
Yeah, this was a 38-point spread. And I mean, I feel lucky to cover this one, which it didn't seem very likely. I mean, it was 14-0 like at the end of the second quarter, towards the end of the second quarter. And Ohio State got that late touchdown to go up 21-0. But still, if you're going to try to cover a 38-point spread, like you want a little bit more cushion than that. But like you said, in the second half, things just started to spiral out of control, and there were quick touchdowns in succession for Ohio State with defense, whatever it was. And then it was 45-0, and Purdue got down there, and they tried to kick a field goal just to like make it so it wasn't a shutout, and they end up, I think it was pulled left or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was wide left. You're like, you could just see like, we got to get a point on the board, and just like, they should have tried to go. It was, I think they were in the red zone or something. Like you could have tried to score a touchdown or something, but like, let's kick the field goal so we don't get shut out. And you miss the field goal and still get shut out. So it just, nothing was really going right for Purdue. Like a few,
everything was going horribly wrong. And so post-game win expectancy had them not covering, actually. It would have been Ohio State by 36. So, you know, it's funny. The one game you got right could have very easily, if Purdue was not such a shit show, gone wrong.
Yeah. No, I 100% agree with this one, with that one. Okay. This one, neither of us got right. We got number 17.
Rutgers, Scarlet Knights.
Scarlet Knight.
they're hosting number 7.
Minnesota Golden Gophers.
Yeah. Rutgers won 26-19.
Should we have moved them up more?
I don't know.
It's hard.
Like, I mean, they were so bad for so long, but I don't know. It seemed like some things kind of, I won't say got right in this game, but this was not, it wasn't fluky, I should say. Like, they legitimately beat Minnesota, kind of beat them at their own game. I think defensively, this was the best performance from Rutgers in a long time. They really limited that Minnesota rushing attack. Kept Max Brosmer from really crushing them deep at all. It was a lot of just keep the ball in front of you. And Rutgers just looked a lot more sound defensively than they've looked in a few weeks.
Yeah.
And then offensively, I mean, Ethan Calicmanis, not bad. Took some sacks where I was like, what are you doing, buddy? But not bad. And even without Kyle Manungai, ran the ball okay. You know, this was not a horrible rushing performance for Rutgers. Yeah, I mean, I think a little bit of bounce back potential for Rutgers here. I mean, Minnesota's already bowl eligible. Rutgers is 5-4, and they've got at Maryland, Illinois at home, and at Michigan State to go. I mean, that's a slate of games where you should see at least one win. And if they've actually rebounded a little bit, maybe more than that. I don't know how much I would take from it for Minnesota's purposes. It was, again, another close game where they – had the potential to win it. I don't think you say, oh gosh, they're back to being, you know, mediocre or whatever. I think it's the same team that won 4 straight. It's just the kind of luck went on the other side this one, but still think they're a much improved team, and they've got a chance. Probably not. Well, we'll see what Penn State looks like, but probably not against Penn State, but at Wisconsin in the final, I think they'll have a pretty good chance to get their 7th win.
Do we need to move Rutgers up?
I mean, here's the thing with Rutgers is I don't know if this is like a real sign of things to come, or if it's just, you know, they had everything kind of go right in this one. But probably. I think having them 17th is a little bit brutal.
We could do, I mean,
maybe push them up to 15, put Northwestern and Maryland below them.
Okay, I'll do that. Yeah. We're on the fly. This is perfect.
We're really good at the power rankings. It's our favorite thing that we do. Every week.
A lot of time goes into this, but so it's tough. After the top four, it's like a muddled mess. It's really difficult to kind of get a feel for, and a lot of these teams have beat each other, and so you're like, well, how can you have them above them and blah, 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 because, you know, Rutgers had looked just putrid for a really long time, and then you get a win over a team that we had number 6, you know?
Yeah.
So that's, it's kind of tough, like, for that to happen, but we both got that one wrong. We do have,
Ryan, without consulting the play-by-play or your own memories, this game was 9-7 at one point. How did it become 9-7 in favor of Minnesota?
I don't remember. I watched the beginning. Yeah.
So because I came into the game a little bit late, and then I had to catch up on it. It was 9-7, and I was debating this with my brother. Well, okay. It's the Big Ten, so Touchdown and a safety seems most likely to get that 9, but second most likely is obviously 3 field goals. But no, sir, Minnesota missed an extra point.
Okay.
So it was 9-7 for a healthy portion of this game. It was 9-7.
I do remember. Yeah. So the Rutgers, the first half, I think Rutgers outgained Minnesota by like 100 yards. Like,
they should have been up by way more.
It was crazy.
They turned it over on downs on the Minnesota, like 35 on the opening drive. And then they threw a pick. I want to say it was at like the Minnesota 10, something like that. The Ethan Calicmanis pick after like a huge drive where they'd brought it from their own goal line, essentially all the way to the Minnesota goal line. No, they should have been up by a couple of scores at halftime. This should have been a slightly more comfortable feeling Rutgers win. That's why I think they might have figured some things out. They might have righted the ship a little bit. And it's amazing to do that without Kyle Manungai in this game.
In general, Rutgers had a lot of guys drop balls, a lot of receivers drop balls. Minnesota would get stops, and then they would have a defensive penalty on third down and keep Rutgers' drives going. So they were sort of like one side screwing up with they dropping the balls. The other side will make a defensive penalty and keep the drive going. Yep. But Minnesota was up 16-14, probably shouldn't have been. And I'm still thinking like, okay, they can cover this thing. They have the ball and fumble at their own 12. And it was the first turnover Minnesota's had in a month. But once Rutgers got the ball, they were able to punch it in. And then they just were in control of the game after that. So it was just a really weird sort of game. But if you watch the Rutgers defense, they came to play in this one. Like, they were all over what Minnesota was doing. And it was a crazy one. All right, we got a super chat.
Ooh.
Let me pull it up here on the screen. From Eli. UCLA is going to be bowl eligible. Book it. Wow. Hashtag, what is that?
Ogre.
I guess. Is that a UCLA thing?
No idea.
Okay. Thanks, Eli. Yeah. That's awesome.
I mean, I think there's a decent chance now.
For sure there's a decent chance. Yeah.
Pretty decent chance. All right. What's next?
Oh, nice. Okay, sorry. Next up.
Thank you, Eli. You rock.
All right, so we moved Rutgers up to 15, but number 17, we have
Maryland Terrapins.
And where am I blanking? Where's this one? Oregon. They had the pleasure of playing the number one team in the country.
Oregon Ducks.
I don't know how much of a pleasure this game was for anybody. Playing, the people watching at home, truly a really kind of ugly game. Oregon eventually won 39-18. I wouldn't let that fool you. This was not a super dominant performance from Oregon.
No.
They were a ton of penalties, like just tons of mistakes throughout the game. They scored on a fumble return for a touchdown at one point. Like, it just scoring on kind of dopey stuff like that. Forced a couple of picks. Maryland was in this late. It was 29-18.
And Oregon did like the fake punt thing and got a touchdown.
Even to score, they had to do crazy stuff. So they did a fake punt where it was Jacob Birch running it for like 30 yards. And then they scored on, I think it was a tackle eligible, and then went for two on another weird thing with a tackle, or maybe it was vice versa. But it was just like they're having to do so much work to score on this Maryland team that has been like just murder stomped by Northwestern and what was it last week? Wisconsin? Who else murder stomped them? Somebody else. Minnesota.
Minnesota.
But it's just like, you shouldn't have to work this hard, Oregon. I don't know if it's maybe a little hangover of playing Michigan, maybe. But they were kind of like this a little bit against Michigan, too. I just don't know if, it's kind of the ebbs and flows of a season. They're just not at that kind of peak performance again. But it was just a messy, messy game for the Ducks. Dylan Gabriel was fine. he wasn't finding anything open downfield, so it was a lot of short dink and dunk, dink and dunk. And the run game was pretty good. Noah Whittington had a few big runs. Jordan James was fine, but it was not like this tremendous offensive showing at all. I mean, they had 363 total yards on 65 plays. That's not great. Not against Maryland. And the defense came to play pretty well. They picked off Billy Edwards twice. But again, not a super dominant showing. It was, you know, it left quite a bit to be desired. If you were, if you're one of those like me, who's pretty bullish on Oregon this year being a super elite team, it left a little to be desired.
I think whenever I think Oregon's going to like flex its muscles, they have a showing like this. And then when I think, oh, this will be a little closer, Oregon just blows the team out. It's been whatever, the opposite of what I've picked. I've just not been able to get a feel on this Duck team. I think Dylan Gabriel listens to the show, and it's part of his point-shaving madness that's going on. It is madness. But, you know, this was closer than it should have been. And this was, you know, Oregon didn't turn the ball over. Maryland turned it over three times. You know, like this, if that doesn't happen, you know, it's one of those things where like, oh, Maryland could be like in this game even more than they were. But like you said, like they needed a fake, you know, punt to try to like get some, I think it was an 11 point game at that point. Like that, this was definitely playing with your food a little bit too much, but it was like a mucky, like just ugly sort of game. And, you know, Oregon did what they needed to do. I mean, you win by 21.
They didn't do what they needed to do.
Well,
they needed to cover.
Yes, for us, they didn't do what they needed to do. But, you know, if you win by like 21 or whatever, you're like, all right. I mean, that's fine. But you'd like to see a little more.
No, they were never really in seriously threatened. But it was also like just an ugly enough game that, you know, at the point when it was 29-18, it's like, well, could this happen? I mean, and they punted it away. Like, they punted it away only up 29-18 in the fourth quarter. Maryland drives down and scores at that point. It's not looking great.
No, and I think, like, watching this Maryland team a bunch and some, you know, there's some weird stuff going on. But, like, for USC, they feel like they were in control of the game. They're up 15, and Maryland does, like, everything exactly right and ends up winning the game, or up 14, wins the game by a point. It was kind of that same thing. And then, but what Oregon did was they did some stuff to make sure that there wasn't going to be a comeback. Yeah. So, yeah, should they have been in it later than they wanted to be? No. But once they got to that point, that's when muscles were flexed. And like, hey, we'll do the fake punt. We'll do whatever we need to do and take the lead here. And, you know, put some distance here. Separate, which is what they did. We just thought it would be a lot more and a lot sooner, like being at home, crazy stuff. We got another super chat. Love those. Let's see. Oh, wait. I had the wrong. Oh, I didn't put it up here. Here we go. Matthew, he says, love you guys. Who do you think has been the best player in the conference this year? Dylan Gabriel, Rourke, or somebody else?
I'm big on Curtis Rourke as kind of MVP status, just because I think you take him off that team, Indiana's, even with the killer Cignetti, right? That's your
key. He knows the score. He gets the women. Cignetti kills.
Even with him, if you replace Curtis Rourke with Taven Jackson, the drop-off is immense. And I'm not saying it's not for Gabriel on Oregon. It's just Oregon is a multifaceted team. There's a lot of really good stuff there. And I think, you know, put Novosad or Dante Moore in there, I think they probably have one loss more against Ohio State. Maybe two. I don't know. But I think you take Curtis Rourke off Indiana, they're like 5-4, 6-3, something like that, or yeah, whatever. 6-4, 7-3. So, yeah, I'd hand it to Curtis Rourke right now.
Okay, I like that. I'd probably go with Rourke as well. Just the team's very unexpected. 10-0. All right. We also have at number 16.
Northwestern Wildcats.
On a bye, we put Rutgers at 15. 14, we have
Michigan State Spartans.
Charge!
On a bye. 13, we have
USC Trojans.
Didn't lose this week.
On a bye, yes. They stopped their losing streak. Well, not really, but they're going to play this team, who is also on a bye.
Nebraska Cornhuskers.
I'm peeling corn.
At number 12, and now we have a game. We have number 11.
Michigan Wolverines.
Wow. Ah, scratch, 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 scratch.
And they're taking on number 2.
Indiana Hoosiers.
Hey, folks. I'm from Indiana.
This is what, the first game Indiana hasn't covered since the opener, or pretty damn near?
Yeah, this was, we've been riding this train the whole way.
High on cocaine.
And
Casey Jones, you better watch your speech.
No cover. So I don't know if he deserves it, but still, you know.
He knows the score. He gets the ball. Signetti kills.
Can you play the breaking news hit, please, for just a second?
Yeah.
UCLA USC kickoff announced 7:30
a.m.
Oh man, it's almost like they're 2-4-5 teams, and they don't want anyone watching this game. Yeah, all right, let's get into Indiana. All right, so this game, I mean, I thought Indiana just kind of had like one of those everything kind of is going to go wrong in the second half. Curtis Rourke threw a pick. I think it was on his own 7, something like that.
That was bad.
And Michigan turned it into a field goal, I think, because they weren't really moving the ball a whole lot. And then it was just a lot of punting in the second half. The offense just kind of shut down entirely. They had nothing doing. Just seemed like they went into the tank a little bit. They eventually won 20-15. It was 17-3 at halftime, and we were both like texting each other back and forth, like, oh, Signetti kills.
17. They're already covering. This is great. And then,
Indiana
went to nothingville. It was like, what?
Because it's the week where Ryan is going to get everything wrong. It had to go wrong. And they won by 5. What a tremendous score this is. 20-15. That's got to, you know, between this and Oregon winning 39-18, are those two scoregamis? Like, those can't have happened that often. End up with a 21-point margin at 39-18 too often, and you certainly don't end up with a 5-point margin at 20-15 too often.
Yeah, the very strange. This was so weird because Indiana scores 3 points in the whole second half. Like, this is the killer Signetti's. Like, you score, you know, I think their yards per attempt were pretty good. 7.4. Is that, that's okay, right?
It's fine. It's not where they've been.
Only 206 passing yards. Yeah.
Do you expect a little bit of depression against Michigan's defense? Sure. But this was miserable even by Michigan standards compared to where Indiana was coming into this. They're a, you know, top 5 offense in the country this year.
Yeah. 4 of 11 on third downs. That's not going to get it done for Indiana. Michigan was 5 of 15. Indiana missed their only fourth down conversion. It's one of those things where it looked like at the line of scrimmage, Michigan was able to sort of dictate the terms, and they were able to put a lot of pressure and sort of disrupt plays for Indiana. And that's when you're going to look at, okay, when you play Ohio State, is the similar thing going to happen? So people are going to compare, I think, the sort of athletes that Michigan has on their front and the, you know, how much disruption they were able to cause with Indiana's offensive line. Can Ohio State do the same thing? So a little concerning there. I don't know if you feel concerned, but I mean, you get the win. They're 10-0. Like, that's freaking ridiculous. They haven't had any sort of like just letdown games at all. They've just blown people out. And, you know, even last week going down 10-0 and then just kind of blow. I think they were down 3-0 in this game, and then score the next 17, and it looked like they were cruising. Then they sort of like turtled, and Michigan was able to kind of keep it close and muck it up a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not super concerned. I think, you know, everybody has a you know, mediocre performance every now and then. I still think their defense is pretty legit. Not that it's a huge thing to hold this Michigan passing attack to, you know, pretty miserable numbers, but they did. And they also kept them from really running the ball. So I think it was like a, you know, when your offense is a little bit not clicking, to have your defense step up and win a game for you is huge. So I'm not concerned yet, but I do think it's a little inauspicious going into what they have coming up here.
Inauspicious. Love it. So Matthew says there are now 10 scores of 39 to 18 in college football all time.
All right. Can we get the numbers on 20 to 15, or is that just way too many?
I don't know. There's a lot. USC, UCLA, what network is that on? Did you?
NBC.
It's on NBC?
NBC.
Yeah. Okay. So, and wow, that's a late one. It's on NBC. Okay.
Yep.
Sweet. Thanks for that. So the breaking news there. Yeah, I'm not even going to go. You don't go to the games anyway.
No.
I've decided I don't want to drive to Pasadena and do this. I can just cover the game from home. I'll have my team do it. USC, they've been stinking. Like, it's not worth my time. I'll go to the beach for a little bit. I'll watch some other games. And I'll just cover the team at home and let my team mess with the parking and all that kind of stuff over at the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
You go with my decision? You're cool with that?
I'm totally fine with your decision not to attend a football game. I think you should do that more often.
Okay. Let's go number 10. We've got
Washington Huskies.
And they were taking on number 4.
Penn State Nittany Lions.
Washington was absolutely non-functional in this game, got smoked off the field by Penn State. It was 28-0 at halftime, finished 35-6. They made a quarterback change in this game, DeMond Williams. This was not just a platoon thing, if you're just looking at the stats. No, DeMond Williams came in because Will Rogers was a booty in the first half.
Yeah.
DeMond Williams wasn't a whole lot better, but he did look a lot more functional, and he did present some danger for Penn State. But then Penn State had a lot of success just zero blitzing him. Just send six guys at him and get to him. And I think with him not having a ton of reps yet at the college level, his clock was not quite fast enough to get around that. But his scrambling ability does provide an element. I don't know if this is going to be a permanent switch or if it's just Will Rogers was not getting it done in this game, so we went to Williams. I think we'll see maybe in the practice reports and whatnot this week whether that's a permanent thing. But yeah, Washington was just nothing. They had nothing going against this Penn State defense. And then on the other side, I thought this was not necessarily shown in the stats. I thought this was the best game for Drew Aller in a while.
Yeah,
really accurate throwing the football. Penn State got over some of its red zone issues mainly by just handing the ball to Tyler Warren, which hint, hint, that's what you should have done. James Franklin last week against Ohio State, just hand it to the big guy who's a freak at the running back position who doesn't play running back, but he's probably, your best power back. Just hand it to him on short yardage. He will go make a play for you. He uncharacteristically had a fumble in this game. That was not great. But otherwise he was awesome. But they were balanced. They ran the ball really well. They threw the ball really well. It was like they were exercising some demons after what they experienced last week, especially in that first half. In the second half, they just kind of sat on it. Weren't too aggressive in trying to, put the true pasting on Washington. But it was, I thought, a really good and balanced performance from Penn State, showing there's no real hangover effect from that Ohio State game. And then, they're still in line for a playoff spot. So I think that was the message that they kept hammering on the broadcast that James Franklin's been telling his team. And I think they responded to that. That was a big thing from this is I think Penn State's response to what they experienced last week was, that's an A+.
Yeah. Jonah Coleman, 11 attempts, 24 yards long of 7. Like that's not going to get it done. Each team, David, you want a Big Ten-y? How Big Ten-y this is?
Yeah, please.
8 drives. That's what each team had.
Oh, yeah, baby.
8. So this was one of those things where Penn State's up, 28-0 at half? And then just sort of like put it in neutral and just cruise down the hill on the way out. Scored a touchdown in the fourth quarter. But Washington couldn't do diddly. And this was a shortened game. So Penn State made sure there wasn't going to be any sort of comeback. Not pretty. Penn State just kept the ball. Like they converted 10 of 13 third downs and one on fourth down. So this was not a Jed Fish performance for the record books. I don't know. There wasn't really a Panama. It just was like, you're just not, it just wasn't.
He couldn't figure out what to do offensively. There was just, and I don't, a lot of it is just that Penn State's really good defensively. And,
they showed Washington.
Washington lacks some personnel at some key spots. Offensive line wasn't great in this game.
Grant said, as a Husky fan, this felt like those games we played against Stanford when they had Andrew Luck. And then Eli says, James Franklin never saw a falling piano he didn't fall in love with, and guaranteed he learns nothing from Saturday's red zone success. So, yes.
That seems fair. That seems right.
Yeah.
We'll see, though. I mean, it was good, and it was good to get Tyler Warren the ball there. So it isn't asking too much for him to learn that the thing that works on short yardage midfield should also work on short yardage on the goal line. So hopefully just – you don't have to be super creative on the goal line. You just have to have, like, an idea of what's actually going to work and what actually isn't against the team. And Tyler Warren – putting the ball in Tyler Warren's hands – when you have to do something is what smart. You should be doing. It's just, it's not rocket science.
Okay. We have number 9.
Wisconsin Badgers.
On a bye. Oh, yeah. Number 8.
Illinois Fighting Illini.
Hi, I'm from Illinois.
Also... on a bye. Yeah. We talked about 7 Minnesota. Let's go to number 6.
Iowa Hawkeyes.
Forgot to do my thing. They were in the Rose Bowl taking on, we have them now at number 5 from 18 to 5, baby.
UCLA Bruins.
Wow.
All right, lest anyone think we're being nuts here, the big deal with this league is there are 4 really good teams, and then there's a whole lot of, I don't know, and UCLA, just by virtue of winning 3 straight, is now like the top tier of the, I don't know, but that could change next week. It's just, they won 3 others against INO teams, and so it's now, I don't know, sure. UCLA won this game 20-17. It was kind of similar to the Nebraska game in that, like, if you were just watching, like, kind of just as a layman and not paying attention to, like, the turnovers, UCLA was pretty much dominating the game early on, and probably should have been up by more, and then it finished as a 1-score win for the Bruins. Ethan Garber's was basically the sole reason it wasn't a dominating win for UCLA, and then was pretty good in the second half. But he had 3 turnovers. 2 of them came within the Iowa 5. That's not good, just so you know, out there at home. And then he had another pick that set up Iowa's early touchdown on the first drive for UCLA through an interception. That was probably the worst throw of the game. The 2 red zone turnovers, he had one where he's getting hit as he's throwing it. But then I was watching and I'm like, okay, he's hit as he threw, but where was he throwing it? Because everyone was covered. So even if he
wasn't hit,
unless the intention was to throw it through the back of the end zone, there was nowhere to put that ball. So he probably should have just been eating a sack right there. He didn't. It was very similar to the Hawaii game. But then he settled down in the second half. The big story, though, was that UCLA found a running game. I talked to Fink a little bit last week about Iowa's defense actually not being what we think of as Iowa's defense the last couple of years. And that was really the big takeaway from this one. UCLA, without a running game all year, was able to dictate things on the ground. UCLA, on both sides of the ball, really dominated the line of scrimmage. I will take apologies now from all Big Ten listeners who have been saying, oh, no way a West Coast team's going to be able to handle the line depth of the Big Ten. And I've been banging the drum that, you know, and this is no offense, but like the dirtball Big Ten teams are going to have struggle with, you know, the former Pac-12 skill talent. I don't think either side has been proven exactly true yet, but I do think both sides were prone to some hyperbole. UCLA, I think they're now 4-5. They've got Washington coming up next week. They've got USC after that and Fresno State. Bowl game is possible. For Iowa, I don't think you, again, I don't think it's a throw the baby out with the bathwater. I think the big problem in this one is hopefully Brendan Sullivan is not too hurt. UCLA was getting after him, hit him really, really hard several times. And he didn't look like he was, you know, laid up with a huge injury. It just looked like he'd taken way too many hits, maybe, you know, whatever. I don't want to speculate, but he was just standing on the sideline for most of the second half. They brought in, I think it was their scout team linebacker. Is that my read on who they're, so. And he actually did okay. I think if they've got a healthy Brendan Sullivan, I think they can still win some games. It's not like this isn't the horrible loss it would have felt like a month ago. This UCLA team has gotten better. So you lost by 3 on the road to a team that's improving a lot. So I don't think that's necessarily something that should derail your entire season. But yeah, I mean, UCLA did a great job against Caleb Johnson. Shut him down, more or less.
It's crazy.
Probably did the best job against Caleb Johnson as anyone's done this year. Carson Schwechinger is a man on a mission. He had 2 picks. Kane Medrano nearly had 2 fumble strips. UCLA's linebacker core is very, very good.
This was 10-0 Iowa. Feeling pretty good about my pick. And then it wasn't. If you would have said, oh, by the way, and I'll give David props because he said UCLA's run defense has actually been very good. And I thought this would be one of those things where Iowa just sort of buttoned down and they can just run the ball. UCLA dominated time of possession and Iowa ran for, I think, 80 yards total. That's not a, like, Kirk Ferentz isn't going to win a lot of games if you're getting dominated time of possession and you can't run for more than 100 yards with the kind of running backs you have. Sullivan didn't look very good. When did he get hurt? What was the, was that early? I don't remember what the,
no, it wasn't early. I think it was early in the second half is when he went down. It was like, if you play the stupid video game that I always talk about, it was like his whole body was in the red, like towards the end of the first half. Like there were some hits. He had a scramble to set up their 4th-and-2 field goal where he took a shot to the upper thigh that just looked like it hurt a lot. Like UCLA safety, Brian Addison, just came in like a missile low and just whacked him on a scramble. But it was just a lot of that. Like just the accumulation of body blows he was taking, I think it eventually just, nope.
You're like, this ain't.
My body is non-functional anymore.
Yeah. Iowa just did not look like the Iowa teams that, you know, when your things are working, when you're scoring more than 40 points multiple times, and they just didn't. I was out up in Santa Monica. It was 10-0. I get to the bar, sit down, like UCLA kick a field goal. Then Iowa, that horrible pick, it set up a Bruins touchdown. And then you just kind of felt like, uh-oh, it's 10-10. And then it just, nothing was going right for Iowa after that. I got a new drop. Our buddy Doug that created the Signetti ones, we got a Deshaun Foster drop. Are you ready?
Oh, yeah.
He knows the score. He knows geography. Foster kills.
Do one more time.
He knows the score. He knows geography. Foster kills.
I mean, pretty good.
Oh, that's really good.
I love it.
Oh, boy.
Love it. So people are saying, like, it's ridiculous. Who do you want at number 5? Like, if you're in the chat, you're watching live, tell us who should be number 5, because we'll give you whoever you pick. There's like 10 reasons why there's no way they should be 12 instead of 5. But yes, give us your thoughts if you want someone else at number 5. I don't know. Does it matter? We'll see. But I mean, these
who
are
cares?
The best.
Like, it's going to change every single week, and it should.
Yeah.
Like, there isn't. there isn't a true number five in this league. Like Illinois just lost two straight. Matthew just said Illinois. Illinois just lost two straight. One to Minnesota.
I had Illinois higher. He's like, they've lost two in a row. I'm like, that's fair.
Yeah, yeah. When they lost to Minnesota at home and didn't look great doing it. Like, I don't know. Like, yeah. I don't think UCLA is like, quote, the fifth best team in the Big Ten, but I also don't know who it is. Like, I think on any given day, literally anyone from 5 to 17 can beat each other.
Yeah. We got a
Nebraska.
Not that. I hit the wrong. I was trying to scroll. Super chat. So Colt, if you remember, he had a son that was born like a few weeks ago. And since Remington Steele has been born, the Bruins, they're 3-0. They may never lose again, Colt says.
That's right, baby.
You can guarantee that, Colt. If you were going to say super chat like $1,000, we could guarantee that for you. So $5, we can't do that, you know, but
yeah,
you probably don't have any expenses now with the new
This is just the start of UCLA's Pete Carroll era. I think that's obvious at this point. You know, they're going to finish this year like 6-6. It'll just be like 2001 for USC. Then next year it's going to be 2002 where they finish like 10-2. They go win the Orange Bowl against Iowa. Sure. And everyone's talking about them like they're the best team in the country at that point.
There you go.
That's what it's going to be. It's just, it's, you know, history doesn't rhyme. It absolutely repeats exactly at all times.
Nice.
No?
Okay.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, perfect.
Agreed.
Yeah, sure. All right. And then we already talked about everyone else. Penn State, Ohio State, Indiana, and Oregon rounds out our top four. So basically we're four good teams. And look, in just in general, if you've watched sort of what's happening in college football with the 12-team playoff, it's sparked a lot of discussion. There's a lot of conferences that are sort of like killing themselves at the top. I mean, with the Big 12, it looks like a one team bid, but maybe Colorado wins it and beats BYU and then they can get two in. You know, the ACC, there's a mess and stuff going on there. The SEC is absolutely insane. There's like a scenario where like eight teams are tied at 6-2. I think they need to do a 9-game schedule, like this 8-game schedule stuff. You have so many ties. I think that's one of those things so it's sort of crazy over there. I think the Big Ten is in a good spot because you would love to get like four teams in the playoff. And the way it's set up right now, you know, with Oregon, Indiana, Ohio State, and Penn State, it's looking pretty good that those four teams are going to get in. There's some people talking about Indiana, their lack of strength of schedule and stuff, but they've murder stomped most everybody. Maybe if they get blown out by Ohio State, but I think they're going to be getting in at 11-1. What do they have? Purdue left? Is Purdue their final game?
They're gonna finish at worst 11-1.
Right. So I think you're in. Like, I think they're gonna jump up. Well, there'll be rankings tomorrow. Even though it wasn't a dominating win over Michigan, I think they're gonna jump up. You know, Georgia's lost. Like, so I feel like you're gonna get four teams in, which is a good spot. Like, we don't know what's gonna happen in the SEC. There's a lot of mess and things going on. There could be a lot of ties. But for the Big Ten, I think for the first year of the playoff, this is pretty good. You'd rather have like four solid, because the SEC is a mess at the top and the Big Ten is like solid at the top. It's a mess everywhere else. And I think you'd rather have that in this playoff era.
Yeah. I mean, I think Indiana would be the odd one out of the four in the Big Ten because, just because they're Indiana, which is unfortunate. But I think they'd be in. Like, I think they would still be in at 11-1. I think the SEC right now, I mean, a lot depends on who can emerge as that like third or fourth team. But they could still, I think I have to look at the cross schedules, but I think they could still beat up on each other pretty good. A scenario where the Big Ten gets four teams in seems likely.
Yeah, it seems very, very likely at this point. All right, we got another super chat from Ben. $5. Can you say something negative about the Ducks, please?
What can you say negative about the Ducks?
They didn't cover.
They didn't cover. They looked as assy as a very elite team can look in beating a team by 21.
Yes.
What's something cutting?
Did you like the – so it was Under Armour versus Nike. Did you like the Under Armour uniforms better or the Nike uniforms better? We had some comments about the Maryland's uniforms. They look pretty good.
I've never been a big Oregon uniform guy.
I haven't really either.
No,
some of the Maryland ones are a little too much. Like they're trying to do it. But I thought these ones were pretty good.
I like the ones. What are the Oregon ones with like they've got a lot of silver, like the silver like feathers and stuff.
I kind
of
like that, those ones.
I don't like their yellow. It's a weird thing. I don't like it. I think the neon whatever shitty yellow doesn't look very good. What can we say? Is that negative enough?
Matthew said Oregon got out uniformed, but he said they didn't really. Okay. Well,
okay. Are we being negative enough? Do I need to bring some more negativity? I can do it.
Do a little more.
All right. So I said a couple weeks back, I don't know if it was on the show or something, but like the bottom 5% of every fan base, they're cretinous. Not you, the listener, you listening to this right now, you watching this right now, you're the beautiful, like top 1% of your fan base. And you know that. You know that in your heart. You know that in your mind. But the bottom 5% of your fan base, no matter who you are listening, you know what they are. They're horrible. They're awful. We hate them. For Oregon, it's the bottom 10%.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Ben didn't think he got his money's worth. Do you think you got it now, Ben?
Like, yeah, I mean, I'm just saying a little bit more.
Fan base, there's a higher percentage for Oregon.
A higher percentage of cretinous. And again, that's not you listening, okay? So just understand that. You are beautiful and awesome. Duck fans, I saw you posting in response to my message board post this morning. You're lovely. I love you. But the bottom 10%, we can agree, right? We can agree? Not so great. All right?
Yeah. All right. Well, Ben, hopefully you got your money's worth there. So why don't we do this? Let's take a quick break and we'll do a little question and answer. You ever do that before? Yeah, we do that all the time. Back in a minute, everybody. All righty. We're back here. Oh, the podcast of champions. The chat's pretty active. And we got a lot of people in there. Oh, yeah. We got like 77 people in the chat. So thank you guys for doing that. Ben said Dave walked a very thin line. thin line very well. Thanks, gents. Oh, thank you. Let me put that up there.
I love 90% of Ducks fans.
Matthew said Ohio State's pretty bad, too.
Ohio State, I've had some experiences with, but I don't have enough experience yet with the new Big Ten fan bases to know who's really bad and who's just, I'm getting it on Twitter from, you know, the again, 5% of idiots.
Ooh, we got a good one.
5% is always the baseline. 5%, like you're always expecting some dummies.
Eli says, I'm a Duck, class of 08. Why do you think I'm a 247 Sports Bruin subscriber? David nailed that one. I'd say 15%.
That's right, baby.
Wow. So you got you got Ducks on your side. Sweet. Okay. Well, let's see. We do have a voicemail.
Yeah, baby.
You want me to play it for you?
Oh, yeah.
You sure?
Yeah.
You gonna ask nicely?
Yeah, girl.
Say please? All right, we'll just play it.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Perk. UCLA's triumphant win on Friday really got me thinking of this kind of reality. And, you know, just to think of it, I've been listening to the show for a while. And if I manually went through and just muted, or skipped through anytime Dave talked and just listened to Ryan, aside from hearing about fishing in Catalina and volleyball and a bunch of other stuff, one of the main takeaways I would have is that UCLA is just a downtrodden, football program. And that's, you know, it's really gravy on top. If they have any success whatsoever, just because of how they are as a basketball school. And with that in mind, I'm wondering now that UCLA is 4-5 and looking to make its, make a bowl game, and not just a bowl game in its first year in the Big Ten, just a bowl game in period. It just got me wondering, Ryan, is it time to give a lifetime extension to Deshaun Foster? Because I think we're there. Thanks, guys.
He knows the score. He knows geography. Foster kills.
Yeah, I think, I mean, did he play there at UCLA? Was he like a legend? So just blank check. Here's a contract. You fill in the date. Like whenever you want it to end, you just write it down. And Deshaun Foster, you're the man. I love it. Yeah, I think that's a Perk is very smart.
He's a smart fella. He knows the score.
Does he?
He knows.
He gets score. Jokes.
He knows geography. Foster kills.
So good. I mean, that's such a good drop.
It's so good.
I love it.
All right. Do we have any actual questions?
I think
today?
We have one email. Do you want to read this one?
Or let me pull it up. Who's it from? Alex?
Yeah. If you don't, I can do it.
I got it. This is from Coach Alex V. One has to wonder, was Danton Lynn the reason UCLA's defense was so good last year, or was it really Akaika Molloy? Think this through. UCLA's best unit last year was the D-line, their coach, Molloy. This year's defense is making huge strides and is led by a walk-on inside linebacker coached by Molloy. Outside of the Indiana game, the defense has been legit. Did SC do UCLA a favor here? Let that marinate. Thoughts? Keep it mad, boys. Go Bruins.
Hey, Coach Alex.
I think the truth is multifaceted.
Oh.
I think we can contain two thoughts within our minds at once. Become like us. Philosopher Kings! USC's defense has improved this year. Danton Lynn has done a good job there. Their edge rush did not exist before the season, still does not exist, and yet he has constructed a defense that is significantly better than it was last year. Also, Akaika Molloy has done a very good job as UCLA's defensive coordinator. He has constructed a defense without much of an edge rush, and he has done it by moving guys around, doing some creative stuff. He has done an excellent job. These are two defensive coordinators who are both pretty good at their jobs. I think whatever they were able to accomplish at UCLA last year was probably in tandem with each other. Thank you for your time.
No, I think that's right. Been really impressive what Molloy's been able to do at UCLA this year. Yeah, I think both teams could have better rosters on that side. So it's a lot of scheme, a lot of coaching up, trying to get guys to be in the right spot. And yeah, pretty impressive.
Molloy's really grown into it too. I would say at the beginning of the year, he wasn't crushing it the way he is, but you could see it. He had an interview like a month ago. It was after one of their bad games, and he was like in tears talking after the game. And he's like, I'm, you know, working his ass off. I think he has really, it's a weird thing to talk about a coach developing because you're thinking of these as grown people who are already at their peak. But I'd say he's developed as a coach a lot this year too.
Yeah.
The big data point in favor of Danton Lynn that I want everyone to remember whenever they're, there's a lot of things to make fun of USC about, and I do most of them. I don't do this one as much because the big thing to remember is that every single player, more or less, who made an impact for UCLA's defense last year when it was really good was also on the team the previous year when they were one of the worst defenses in college football. The change was really Danton Lynn. And I think he's done, you know, if you're watching USC, they're not busting the way they were last year. Like, it's not like they're getting just, another huge explosive play over the top against USC safeties because they don't know how to play because Alex Grinch, that's where his special focus is. It's a lot better. It's not great. It's not top 20. I think it would have benefited, obviously, if he could have, you know, instead of had the Murphy twins go to the NFL, had one of them transfer to USC too. But with what they have, it hasn't been great, but it's been a lot better. It's been a lot improved, and they've had some injuries too. I mean, Eric Gentry going down. Gentry?
What do we go Gentry, with there? Yeah, Gentry.
Gentry. With him going down earlier, that obviously hurt them. He's one of their best playmakers.
He's so, been out five games, still leads the team in tackles for loss. So.
Yeah, so
I think tied for sacks too.
And I'm far from a USC apologist, so understand that it pains me to say that. But no, Danton Lynn, I think, is a good defensive coordinator.
This is I'm glad Mark had put this in there. Does Wazoo have a shot at being one of the top four highest rated conference champions? No, so they're not. They would have to be an at-large. That's not like a recognized, because they only have two. There's not like a conference champion for like the Pac-12 won't be recognized like that.
Their shot is Boise losing.
Something right? like that.
Yeah, because they would have to be kind of in that mix at number 12, and I don't think they're going to bring in both. Well, no, because the G5 is going to get in no matter what, so scratch that. Washington State's not getting credit as a G5 or a P4. Am I correct in that? Or could they be the highest rated G5?
I don't think they can be the highest rated G5, but they're not going to get a – yeah, they would have to just be like an at-large –
they're just in like a weird middle ground, right? Where they just have to finish 12 or higher.
I think they're screwed. So the fact that,
well, let's look at the CFP rankings. Hang on.
Yeah, they're
Were they ranked?
But this reminds me, we need to do our mythical Pac-12 power rankings.
All right, too. So they're at 21. Hang on. Let's look at this. So if Boise State loses, then that just means that, well, frankly, Washington State should get credit because no one else is even close. But anyway, they'll probably, if they finish out, what would they finish? Like 11-1? Are they having a title game this year? The Pac-2?
No, I don't think you can because they don't have.
Yeah, I guess that's true. they'll finish 11-1. On how things shake out.
People are saying they needed to be undefeated.
True.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's...
You could do some crazy stuff to make it happen, but it would require a lot of crazy stuff.
All right. Well, let's do our mythical Pac-12 power ranking since we were talking about Washington State. Having a great season, but, yeah, this was not what you needed. Okay, we have number 12.
Stanford Cardinal.
I think they're on like a 6-game losing streak or something like that. Something not.
Yeah, but blessedly they didn't have to play football this weekend.
Okay. Number 11.
Oregon State Beavers.
Still hot dog shit. They lost to San Jose State at home.
Ooh. That's.
They're 4-5 now. Ken Niumatalolo, by the way, is doing some good things at San Jose State. He's up to 6-3.
You like him better than Brett Brennan?
I'm just saying, Arizona, you got lucky with Jed Fish, but go triple option. That's where the joy lands.
Number 10.
Utah Utes.
They lost the Holy War. Did you see this?
Yeah.
The AD went bananas?
All right. This is the kind of thing that I'm like, am I just not steeped in it anymore? It was like a normal bad call. Like just a normal one.
It wasn't
super weird. There was a hold. Was it like egregious enough for it to be called at that point? I don't know, but there was a hold.
It wasn't like the gods were against
you. It's not like he was struck down by lightning and they called it a hold on the defensive player. He had hands all over him. If you want to argue like the margins of it, like fans do, but for the AD to come out after that game and be like, they stole it from us, these fucking refs. Sorry, that's your one, Griffin. That's just one. Okay. Yeah. There won't be more. I promise. These refs, it's like, first of all, the head ref was a Pac-12 ref last year. So if he's got any bias at all, it's probably in favor of a former Pac-12 team. Second, that wasn't that kind of game. It wasn't that kind of call. It wasn't like, you know, a procedural thing where they're like throwing minutes back on the clock or taking seconds off or anything. It was normal, you know, marginal call that you see in all sorts of football games all the time. Mark Harlan, big clown behavior. Just letting you know.
Yeah.
And also we hired Steve Alford at UCLA. He's forever in my, that guy's a turd book.
Was he at UCLA?
He was the assistant AD who ran point on the Steve Alford hire.
Oh, wow. Grant said first win for BYU at Rice-Eccles since 2006. Pretty impressive there. You know what stole this game? You didn't score in the freaking second half. Like you didn't score a point. So
come on.
That's what hurt. Not
it is beneath one call. Utah. It is beneath Utah at this point in its program's trajectory to be whining like this. You don't get to whine like this, but not when you've been winning every single season and you have one bad season and it's like, we're gonna whine about stuff now. Don't do that. It's bad for the brand.
Number 9.
Arizona Wildcats.
They're
still terrible, but they were luckily on a bye.
Number 8.
California Golden Bears.
They've won 2 in a row. Right?
Yeah, that's right. They went on a Friday night to Wake Forest and beat them bad, 46-36. Fernando Mendoza, he's the truth. It's amazing that Justin Wilcox was thinking about not starting him at the beginning of the year.
Yeah. Okay. Number 7.
USC Trojan.
Excuse me.
A blessed bye.
They're on a bye. Number 6.
Washington Huskies.
Not on a bye, blessedly.
They got murder stomped. Number 5. We have them here. We could move them up, I guess.
UCLA Bruins.
It's fine.
We have them the same spot as we do in the Big Ten. Because at number 4, how are you going to be better than Kenny Dillingham?
Arizona State Sun Devils.
No Cam Scatabo, no problem. ASU went into the hostile confines of their own home stadium to play UCF.
The hostile confines.
I could have sworn it was a road game. They won 35-31. Levitt, their quarterback, is awesome. They're 7-2. That's crazy. They've got an Cartman was posting about it on Twitter the other day. They've got an outside chance at the playoff. They could they could win the Big 12 and make the playoff. It could happen. Keep the dream alive.
Pretty go crazy. Sun Devils. Number 3,
Washington State Cougars.
Wazoo continuing to beat them bloody. They're 8-1 now, 49-28 over Utah State. Yeah, nothing more to say. No notes. They're doing what was dreamed of for both these teams in their Mountain West season, but Washington State's the one doing it. They're 5-0 at home, 8-1 overall. Go Cougs.
Number 2.
Colorado Buffalo.
Road win at Texas Tech. The Big 12 this year is a little bit of a random number generator, but Colorado has decreased the randomness somewhat. They won 41-27. They are ranked. They have a decent shot at the playoff themselves.
Yeah, they can make the conference championship game because I think Iowa State lost again, so that helps.
Yeah, they'll have a pretty good chance because they'll play BYU for the conference title more than likely.
And then number 1, of course,
Oregon Ducks.
Nice. Good stuff. We had a lot going on for only 6 games. What's next week when we're going to do?
We have a preview of what should be just a ho-hum week in the Big Ten.
We got 7 games, yeah. Any ranked on ranked doesn't look like it.
No, it's. I think we're all setting up for the following week. Now, that doesn't mean there won't be funny things. I think Oregon, Wisconsin has a chance to be funny. As we all know, Nebraska versus USC, because USC, every USC football game is funny.
Yes.
That one will probably be funny. But otherwise, no, it's a lot of the, I mean, I think Friday night should be fun. UCLA, Washington, old Pac-12 matchup. Saturday, you're going to have to squint a little bit to see some fun stuff, but that won't prevent us from previewing it at length. And you guys should all watch.
Penn State 8-1, Purdue 1-8. So
the
good.
The palindrome.
Like, what the hell? Pac-12 matchup, UCLA, Washington, another Friday night game.
Yep. Oregon, Wisconsin, I'll have you remember, I picked Wisconsin to win that one preseason. Will I pick them to win it in this one?
Yeah.
Stay tuned.
Sweet. All right, good stuff. Well, thanks, everyone, for being with us in the chat. I mean, we got to play this one more time.
He knows the score. He knows geography. Foster kills.
Can we do a geography screen grab somehow? I don't know what the like. If we have a map or something, or like, you want to surrender Cobra?
Yeah, it's so good.
We can't do geography.
Oh, I got to do the full surrender Cobra.
We do, okay. Yeah. Sweet. All right. Well, that's gonna wrap it up for David Woods. I am Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Bye.